This is the 2008 West Coast School of the Prophets. Our theme for the weekend has been how to master the secrets of Bible study. And we've had with us our brother Roger Lewis from the Christchurch North Ecclesia in New Zealand. We've come to session number 8, which is how to value and benefit from the Bible expositions of the pioneers. Brother Roger?
Well, tonight then, we're going to actually spend only a brief amount of time on the writing of the pioneers before moving on to our case study. And our case study tonight on the abomination of desolation is basically going to illustrate how a short extract from a pioneer writing, for me anyway, was extremely helpful in coming to a conclusion on a particular biblical conundrum. And so we'll come to that because it's, again, the abomination of desolation is one of those knotty problems. So that'll be an interesting case study tonight to use as an illustration of the benefit of the pioneer writings. So I've actually only got one slide on this topic for the benefit of the pioneer writings, but there are some things that I did want to say which I think are worthwhile, and they are these. It's really part of what we were saying earlier, weren't we, about the heritage of the truth. We have a large body of Christadelphian literature that represents the thinking of the very best minds of our community down through time. Brother Thomas was no mean Bible scholar. Brother Robert Roberts had devoured Eureka by what age? Anyone know? Something like that. He'd read it at a very early age. And proceeded then to get on with his own Bible studies, wrote out the Daily Companion so that he could do his daily readings to start serious, what he considered to be serious Bible study. Brother John Carter, in my view, was an outstanding expositor, absolutely outstanding. And when you come to Brother John Carter's writings on the epistles, his precision and concise nature of explaining the epistles is unsurpassed, even in our community today. We've got this enormous body of literature that is absolutely first class, and people don't read it. And so as part of that preservation of the heritage of the truth, I'd like to think that somewhere in that was the preservation of the books of the writers of the truth, and that heritage of a community that we've accumulated over time that's actually been enormously valuable. See, in an earlier generation, what used to happen was this. Life was a lot simpler 100 and 150 years ago. The common man in the ecclesia was a blue-collar worker, and he went out and laboured. The hours of his work were tough and long and hard. He came home exhausted. But when he came home, he would do the daily readings with his family. There wasn't a lot of social activity in ecclesial life. There wasn't a whole lot of young people tripping around doing activities. There just wasn't enough time. Just to run the house and stay alive and put bread on the table was a long work. To go to the meeting on Sunday was a blessing and a joy, to fellowship with the brethren, to read the word, to be exhorted from the scriptures, to sing hymns of praise together, to pray to the Father together. These were highlights in the life of our early brethren from 150 years ago. But when they did receive the works of the truth, they counted them as so valuable. Elpis Israel, Eureka, Ways of Providence, Christendom Astray. And the early brethren devoured those books, positively devoured them. And for a brother, after a hard day's effort of coming home and seeing the family and having the family meal and doing the daily readings, one of his blessings at night time, one of his leisure activities was to read the works of the truth. That was how he relaxed. Today we're so busy, filled with all sorts of other clutter, that we haven't got time. So why might we want to find the time amongst our Bible study program schedule of making sure that in that list of books that we read, we include some pioneer writings? I suppose I should define pioneer. I tend to not suggest that we limit the idea of pioneer writings to simply Brother Thomas and Brother Roberts. I think some people perhaps do. I would perhaps go a little bit further abroad than that. I'd certainly include Brother C.C. Walker and perhaps Brother John Carter. Obviously, as time goes on, the word pioneer becomes less appropriate because the word pioneer tends to be the trailblazers at the beginning of the epoch, don't they? And so somewhere down the track, I guess the term doesn't apply. But those early brethren of the first maybe couple of generations of the truth. I think we're very critical to the truth's literature. Well, here's some of the key benefits, as I see them, of reading the works of the truth, the writings of the Brotherhood that are already established. The first thing is that they establish and confirm the foundations of Christadelphian teaching. Brother Thomas and Brother Roberts were so clear about those vital first principle and fundamental doctrines. And their writings always reflect that. They reflect and they confirm the foundations of Christadelphian teaching. One of the great dangers of modern Christian literature is that the foundations are utterly different. For a start off, by the way, what do you think the central foundation of all modern Christian literature is likely to be? From an atonement, from a doctrinal point of view, I think I'm talking about an even broader philosophical basis. Yes, I would suggest actually humanism. That the basis of Christianity is humanism with a religious cloak on. Most of Christianity is humanism with a religious cloak on to make it look pious and loving, but it's actually rank humanism. One of the wonderful things about our brethren is they understood the principles of the truth, and it reflects in their writing. So when we read these works, we're constantly being nourished in what are the foundations of our belief, our thinking, our teaching, our practice. The second thing is, and I think this is one of the huge benefits, is that they permeate our thinking with the Spirit of God manifestation. Because you see, this was the key that Brother Thomas discovered. He was astounded by it. He was passionate about it. And other writers captured that. And I think that is the unique aspect of the truth. If I was to talk about what makes the truth unique, I'd always have God manifestation at the center of the circle. All other doctrines come back to God manifestation. All other doctrines link to God manifestation. Our core purpose document is centered on God manifestation. That's what the truth is about. That God intends to enthrone himself in a family to fill the whole earth with himself, with those that are like him, because they're his offspring. That's the purpose of God. That's the whole story. Beginning to end, that's the whole story. If we don't grasp that, we don't understand the truth. Now, one of the marvelous things about the writings of the pioneers is they constantly breathe in and exhale the spirit of God manifestation. Every step of the way, every phrase, every passage is redolent of that idea. And so when you read those works, you're being constantly reminded of that guiding principle. I think there are lots of people, I have to be careful what I say, and so because I'm on tape, I need to be, I suppose, you know, careful. One should always be very careful, exceedingly careful on tapes. I'll say this in the most restrained and careful way I can, that I'm not convinced that everyone in the Brotherhood today understands God manifestation. And the reason why I know that is because when people talk about the truth and pray in the truth, they unconsciously reveal what they do or do not know and what they do and do not think about the truth. And many people betray by their comments and their language that they do not understand God manifestation. Now, how might this be, since it's the central doctrine of the truth? When you read the writings of the pioneers, you will never forget that idea. Never, never, never. Because they will reinforce it constantly. I was brought up on that diet, and I'm so thankful for it because I'm always alert to it. I notice immediately that God manifestation is absent from a brother's prayer. I can't help it. I'm so on focus for that. I just know. I was brought up that way. But it's those writings that perhaps made me feel so passionate and so strong about that. They distinguish the clarity of the truth from papal and Protestant dogmas. Notice that I have not given the word papal and Protestant capital letters and so grace or honour them with an importance beyond what they ought to have. But the truth gets a capital letter. And one of the marvellous things about Brother Thomas is he's very pungent in his criticism of Christendom. So much so that it's now sort of politically, well, Christadelphians think, oh, maybe Brother Thomas is a bit strong there, you know. Look, Brother Thomas rescued the truth from papal rubbish and from Protestant dogma that had so blurred and confused the truth that the truth had been lost. They felt the excitement of having discovered the lost truth of the Bible, the lost truth of the apostles. Well, I think we're in danger of having a community that are far too soft and gentle towards Christianity, and where the first feelings of an ecumenical spirit are perhaps seen in our own community of a lack of, we don't want to be critical of others. Let's get this clear, by the way. We're never critical of others. We're never critical of others. We're never critical of the Pope as a person. We're critical of the papacy. We're critical of the Catholic Church. We're critical of Protestant teaching. We're not critical of an individual person per se, but we're critical of those ideas which we believe are not only demonstrably wrong, but will not lead to salvation. They will lead to permanent death. Why should we not be critical of them? Anyone that believes them is lost unless they can be recovered. Well, one of the benefits of the Pioneer Writings is that you will stay sharp, on focus and on task about our attitude towards Christianity. It doesn't have the truth. It represents error in the sight of God, and he doesn't accept it. Can I make that any plainer? When we read the Pioneer Writings, you'll really, really feel conscious about that and think, ooh, I think we've got to be a bit careful here. You know, one of our best campaigns, we've done some campaigns where we've actually had lectures about Bible doctrines that are espoused by the churches, or doctrines rather that the churches espouse that we believe are wrong. We never attack the church, but of course we do attack the doctrine. And we've put some very bold and aggressive lectures up about why other church doctrines are wrong. We've had very good success with some of those because they were so challenging. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. That's not the same as criticising people. We don't do that. They promote the power of scriptural argument and the joy of Bible discovery. What I like about that is this. You see, when you read the Pioneer Writings, don't imagine that you're reading so that Brother Thomas can mould your mind and brainwash you into believing what he wants you to believe. People say, oh, I don't want to read Brother Thomas, I want to do my own Bible study. Well, noble, noble idea, except Brother Thomas was miles ahead of you to start with. Why would you want to do your own when he's already a million miles ahead of you? Why not stand on his shoulders and then do some of your own as well, and be thankful for what he's done, and be thankful for what he's established as a foundation? And my experience, and I can tell you this from having now read the Pioneer Writings for 30 years or more, is that to me, the benefit of the Pioneer Writings is they don't take over my Bible study. They become the stimulus to my own Bible study. What Brother Thomas does is leads you off into all sorts of avenues of biblical thought where you think, oh, I've never thought of that before, and away you go. But it's your Bible study you're now doing. What Brother Thomas did was simply provide the catalyst of the idea that triggered the thought, that set the flame of fire, that set you off in a certain direction of Bible study. He didn't do it for you. You're not quoting him rote for rote, word for word, line for line, through some slavish deference to what the Pioneer Writings were. What they did is they liberated your Bible study. Liberated it. They didn't confine it, they liberated it. They got you cracking, they got you going, they got you underway, they got you moving. So to me, that's been an enormous benefit over the years. And I say that because I think it's very important to understand, because sometimes people are anti the Pioneer Writings and anti people that want to read the Pioneer Writings. I'm pro because I know firsthand what the benefits are. And what I can promise you is if you read the Pioneer Writings diligently, they won't take over your mind, they won't brainwash you, but they will be an enormous stimulus to your own private, independent, personal, committed Bible study. Very important. Here's the next one. They stimulate private study and develop personal scriptural conviction. Looks like I've jumped the gun in terms of my points there, because obviously those two ideas are related. That's the whole point. They stimulate your own private study and they develop your own personal scriptural conviction. I'll give you an illustration of that in our case study tonight. Brother Thomas says something about the abomination of desolation. I've got a view on the abomination of desolation. I concur with what Brother Thomas has said, but he helped me to come to my own settled scriptural conviction. But I had to do the work myself in terms of the actual research finally on the subject, because it was just a snippet out of Brother Thomas, not a fully detailed exposition. They improve our understanding, our use, and our appreciation of the English vocabulary. You ever read something in Brother Thomas where you struck a word that you weren't sure of before? You found you had to have a dictionary handy? Guess what? I think that's very good. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why I think that's extremely good. Ideas are conveyed by words. The more limited your vocabulary is, the more limited your ideas will be. There is a simple, powerful nexus between those two things. In some other parts of the world where English is not the common language, it has proven to be very difficult to explain some Bible concepts because they just can't get it, because they haven't got the command of the language to understand. They can't grasp the ideas because they don't have the language. The better your language, the wider the range and depth and complexity of ideas you can grasp. Now, I think there's a crucial thing here. This is a huge benefit to me of the Pioneer Writings. In one of Brother Thomas's books, he's got a sort of depiction of the ages or epochs of man, the Mosaic epoch, and we come down to the Kingdom epoch, and it's a circle. There's sort of circles with rectangles in between. You know that little picture? Sort of like the aeons of time. And the last circle, which is the Kingdom, has got a little blip on the end, and that little blip on the end, it's a little bump on the end of the circle, because it says, doesn't it, in Revelation 20, that there's a little season at the time, the end of the 1,000 years, the little season at the end when Satan is unloosed. Brother Thomas calls that little blip a crescentical prefix. Now, by the way, that's actually quite a good description for a blip on a circle. It's a crescentical, because that's that shape, prefix, right? Meaning an addition to the circle. We probably wouldn't have called it that. We would have called it a bump on a circle. He called it a crescentical prefix. But I quite like that. I've always remembered that. I was impressed with that when I read it as a boy. Looked it up and thought, what on earth's that? Oh, that's the bump on the circle. Ever since, I always talk about crescentical prefixes. So the point that I'm making is, in all seriousness, and this is such a serious point, if ideas are conveyed by language, the better your language, the deeper your ideas. Just think of that. So, imagine we live in the following world. How are you today? I am well. We are developing a pidgin English community. I know that there were brethren years ago that said, look, we struggle a bit with Eureka. But now people are saying, we can't read Christendom Astray. Christendom Astray was written by Brother Robert Roberts for someone who knew nothing about the truth to start them off. And you've got young people say, I can't read it. It's too hard. Well, guess why it's too hard? Because your language is pathetic. Your vocabulary is useless. Because you've had far too much text messaging and not enough Pioneer Writings. Go start reading. Get your dictionary out and start learning. Add some words to your vocabulary. Remember what I said before? One of the marvellous things about the English language is this enormous range of words, so that we can do shadings and colours and tones and subtleties. Well, go learn them. And as you do, your ability to grasp ideas, to rejoice in ideas, and to explain them to others will be powerfully enhanced. And the Pioneer Writings will be of enormous benefit to you, because it will basically up you a notch, kicking and screaming up to another level of language that you might not be used to, but will pay huge dividends in terms of your own spiritual objectives. So I count that as a value. And the last thing is, They encourage growth in knowledge through the wisdom of good plagiarism. Remember what we said about building a library before. We build a library and we quite unashamedly and openly read from all sources and then make those ideas our own by our own due diligence, by our own biblical research. And now it's our idea as well as that person's. And the pioneer writings will give you enormous help through the wisdom of good plagiarism. My personal view is that if a young brother sat down and said, I will simply read what Brother Thomas and Brother Roberts wrote, and by the way, I'm not recommending that, but I'm simply saying that if they read thoroughly what Brother Thomas and Brother Roberts wrote and had nothing else on their bookshelf, I'll tell you now, they'll be streets ahead of 99% of most other people in the ecclesias. Streets ahead. Now, I'm not recommending that you do that because I think there's many other tremendously valuable and helpful books within the Library of Christadelphia. So maybe we should expand this to say not just the benefit of the pioneer writings, but of our Christadelphian body of literature, but not to ignore the pioneers in that process. So those are some of the benefits of the pioneer writings, why we should have them on our shelves and why we need to have them beside our beds as part of our reading program. Who was it that read Elpis Israel once a year just to make sure he was refreshed? You don't know? Brother John Carter. He read Elpis Israel once a year, amongst everything else that he did. You know, I mean, he was only the editor of the Christadelphian, didn't have a lot to do. But he read Elpis Israel once a year, amongst other things, just to make sure that he was on task, staying focused, reminding himself of the basics. So, let's appreciate the heritage of the literature we've got, be thankful for it, and use it to the full. And that really is the close of this section, and now we're going to launch by way of case study into a consideration of a subject and show how that this whole study was triggered by a passage out of a book by Brother Thomas.